My wife just really holds me back.
Okay. Well, I mean, first of all, really?
Yeah, I've heard that word.
Really?
Are you straight up? No, I've absolutely heard. Okay. She say exactly those words.
Hi, this is Jason and Mark with Innerman Radio.
A free service to thinkers everywhere, demystifying the Bible by asking the questions your neighborhood pastor is afraid to answer.
Yeah, we're talking about talents today, Mark.
And how many you have, or which ones you want?
Well, maybe we should start with what a talent is first. Wait.
Well, talent in modern vernacular is, you know, the stuff that you do well, but that's not really the way that Jesus meant it in Matthew 25. Jesus is talking about talents, but he's using them as a measure of money.
Okay, so a talent is a measure of money from during Jesus' day.
Yep,
a
weight, actually.
Oh, so you got, you've got minas, you've got shekels, you've got talents.
Right, right, okay, right.
All right. All right, so when we're talking about talents, we're talking about this parable, and I think most people probably know the parable, but we should probably read through it just for good measure. What do you think?
Sure. Well, yeah. Parable goes like this. In Matthew chapter 25, verse 14, Jesus said, "It's just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability, and went on his journey. Immediately the one who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and gained 5 more talents. In the same manner, the one who had received the 2 talents gained 2 more, but he who received the 1 talent went away and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. And the one who had received the 5 talents came up and brought him 5 more talents and said, 'Master, you entrusted 5 talents to me. See, I have gained 5 more talents.' His master said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful slave. You are faithful with a few things. I'll put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.'" And that's repeated with the next 2 slaves with slight variation. He calls the second one in who'd received the 2 talents. He says, "How'd you do?" And that slave says, "Master, you gave me 2 and I give you 2 more. So you got 4. And then he calls the last slave and he says, "You know, what did I get from you?" And he says, "Well, you gave me 1 and I'm giving you that 1 back." He says, "So I didn't steal anything. It's still yours, but I also didn't do anything with it." And he tries to justify his position. He says, "Well, master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you didn't sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. And I was afraid, and so I went away and I hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours." That's verse 25. "Well, and master said to him, 'You wicked, lazy slave, you knew I reap where I did not sow and gather where I scattered no seed.'" He says, "Your own words condemn you." He says, "You knew I was going to expect more back, and you still did nothing. You should have maybe at least tried to get some interest from the bank, which you didn't do." And so he says, "Strip the talent from this worthless, lazy slave, give it to the guy who has the 10, and cast this guy out." And that's the parable of the talents.
Okay. Seems pretty straightforward, really.
It is. A lot of Jesus' parables are straightforward, but that doesn't mean they aren't significant and have a lot of deeper meaning.
Yeah, so when I'm listening to this, thinking about application, right? So always trying to take, how does this apply to my life? So one of the things that I hear often when we're talking about talents is fruit.
Yep.
So bearing more talents, you know, reproducing more, investing, gaining a return on investment is often compared to like the fig tree, where Jesus is expecting a harvest from the fig tree, and he would condemn it and say, "You know, why is this thing still standing?" Okay, rough paraphrase. And the vine dresser says, "Well, let's get another year and let's see what it gives us."
Yeah.
Okay. Or "I am the vine, you are the branches." You know, so we're talking about producing fruit, and it can that be an exact? What do you think? Is that an exact parallel? You know, producing fruit and producing a return on talents given?
Well, there's certainly a lot of parallels. So obviously there's the idea of some return on that investment. The parables that Jesus makes about fruit, or the illustrations that he gives, are often centered around the idea that if the tree is good, the fruit will be good too. And I think that element is certainly present in the parable of the talents. because what is really brought to light by how they used the talents they were given is what kind of slave they were to begin with. Were they a good servant? Were they a good steward of what they were given? Or were they a wicked and lazy slave like the guy at the end?
Okay. So how does a person know? I mean, like, if I'm reading through this story, I'm going to always put myself in the position of, you know, it's our tendency to always put ourselves in the position of the person who's bearing fruit, the person who's gaining a return on investment, right? So how does a person genuinely know? Because how is that measured? I mean, God's doing the measuring here, mm-hmm. but how do we know based on, is it number of people that we've seen come to Christ through our Bible studies? Is it, you know, good relationships with your neighbors? Is it having a great relationship with your wife, your kids? I mean, how is that? Or is it measured in just activity? Because a person can be doing a lot of great things and they're not lazy.
Right.
Because like in this case here in Matthew 25, that wicked slave, he just hid it in the ground, was lazy, used it as an excuse. But how do we know which part of this applies to us, really?
Yeah. So, you know, to mix our metaphors, Paul, of course, in 1 Corinthians, he says, I planted and Apollos watered, but God caused the growth. So we can't really be, in some cases, so if it's fruit where we're the ones who are responsible for the tree and what it produces, then yeah, we should be able to look at our fruit and say, hey, this was good, I did this right, and so on. Sometimes when Paul preached, I noticed that the results weren't uniformly positive. So he would say, well, I preached and Apollos watered and somebody else did this and somebody else added that. But it was God that was causing the growth. So I think it's important to make a bit of a distinction between things that are under our control and things that aren't. So in the case of the parable of the talents, the master is very shrewd. He gives to each of his servants according to their ability. So he already knows them, and he places in their care the number of talents which he knows they can use properly. So in their case, there should be some responsibility, and they should expect a return for what they're doing. Sometimes there are things over which we're not in control, and it's tempting to say, well, those are my responsibility too. And if I haven't produced fruit in this area or that area, well, then maybe I'm not doing a good job.
Okay. So how do we know if we're doing a good job? So that's the thing we don't use. I mean, you can't necessarily say if someone doesn't come to the Lord that we've been studying with.
Sure.
I mean, it might be because we did some things that we shouldn't have done, or maybe we didn't steward that opportunity the right way, but it might not be. Just thinking about Jesus with his disciples, he didn't win all of them.
Right.
But at the same time, that can also become an excuse, can't it? Because it's easy to hide behind that and say, well, you know, I'm not responsible for, you know, I just do my thing, preaching the word, and it's right. Up to them to, you know.
Right. And, you know, it's their problem.
What measure is there for us in application to know if we're giving God the return on the investment he's made in us?
Yeah, so that's a super good element to talk about, because so it's real easy. I can imagine, let's say the guy who has the two talents, right? Well, maybe he's disappointed that he didn't get five.
Okay.
How come I only got two? Well, his master knows why he only got two, but it could be that this guy says, well, you know, I deserve to have five. I'm clearly responsible enough that five talents would be appropriate for me. Or maybe he does the reverse and he says, well, two talents is too much. I really only want to deal with one.
Okay.
And I think the natural tendency is for people to confuse what things are their responsibility and what things aren't.
Okay. So that leads us right up to that then.
Yeah.
So what is our response? Because that's what you're talking about, that's being measured, right?
Yes.
Is how we stewarded the things that were given to us as responsibility.
Yes.
What are those?
Well, there's a lot of things, but I mean, let's just start close to home. So the things that God has entrusted to you and given you a personal responsibility for. If you're married, it probably starts with your husband or wife, right? That's something that God has placed in your care. You have tremendous amount of influence over your spouse. And sometimes I see this disturbing practice among people where they try and separate their own spiritual progress or success from that of those around them. So I'll give you a terrible example. Guy says, I would love to be a better Christian. I would love to prioritize, spiritual things more, but my wife just really holds me back.
Okay. Well, I mean, first of all, really?
Yeah, heard that word.
Really?
Are you straight up? No, I've absolutely heard exactly those words. But my wife holds me back because she's this or she's that or she's not on board, blah, 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 blah.
So in those ones, you have just like a tendency to want to reach out and grab the neck and start shaking.
Yes.
So, I'd love to be a fly on the wall in your response to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was your response?
Well, I tell them there's no better measure of your spiritual success or progress than your wife.
Okay. What if she's not interested? I mean, okay, let's we're playing scenarios here, all right? So you've got a husband-wife team. We'll bring kids into this later.
Sure.
But
kids will not escape.
Yeah.
So
let's just get down to brass tacks.
Okay.
If the husband, let's say the wife is a Christian.
Yep.
And the husband doesn't ever become a Christian.
Yep.
Does that mean that she didn't steward her relationship with her husband well?
Well, clearly not, because, the scriptures give her that opportunity. If you're married to an unbeliever,
yeah,
stay married, do a great job, be a great wife. That gives you those are the things over which you are responsible for. You've done those things well. Now, is there any guarantee, wife, that you will win your husband, or husband, that you will win your wife? And the answer is no, because they have some responsibility too. So it's important to understand, this was a talent given to me. This is something of which I must steward, but the results oftentimes are not completely under my control. So that one, there's a portion which is definitely under our responsibility, but then they also get to make a choice.
Okay. Well, I mean, that makes sense and everything, but but when she's sitting down and reading this passage and trying to evaluate, have I been a good steward? Have I given God the return on his investment in me? And if she's looking at her husband and saying, well, if I measure it by the fact that he's not a Christian, I'd have to say no. But that's not necessarily the case. So how do we help her out? I mean, maybe there's some things on her that she could have done better. Maybe not. But taking this passage and in trying to evaluate how to apply it, or even is that a useless exercise? Is that like a completely useless waste of time to go back and try to analyze all of that? Because it seems like it would actually could be beneficial, so a person could correct course moving on down the road for other relationships, and not like other marriage relationships.
But
you know what I mean? Just like,
this one didn't work out, but I'm going to really steward the next one. That one I'm going to take seriously.
But just in friendship, right? But, I mean, I guess I'm trying to take this from more of the conceptual and apply it in a specific situation. How would she work through this passage and answer that question? Am I being a good steward here?
Yeah. So we have to do that all the time. And you mentioned earlier, but this comes up often, sometimes when, we have Bible study with someone and maybe it doesn't pan out for them. They decide, no, this Christianity thing is not for me. It is important to go back and do a little after action report and say, okay, well, let's debrief here. Was there something that I could have done better? But at the end of the day, if I've done the best that I could do, well, then that's all that the Lord holds me responsible for. And what they choose to do about it is not really a reflection of me personally. Like, I'm going to do my best, and we have to be honest about that with ourselves and with the Lord. Did I do my level best? Did I take advantage of the opportunities? Did I go in with the right attitude? Did I you know, all those things. And that's a matter of conscience. And just, you know, you've got to look yourself in the mirror and ask, did I do my best? If you did, the results aren't really up to you. So just having very carefully defined lines of responsibility for what is my talent, what was the responsibility that I have, and what isn't. And so particularly in the marriage relationship, the scripture understands that you may not win your unbelieving wife or your unbelieving husband, but you still need to do your best with the responsibility, that is the relationship, that God placed in your hands.
Yeah, that takes a real level of honesty.
Yes, I mean, it does.
That's really some time to pause and a great opportunity to talk to God and ask. They'll say, through his word, reading about his character, looking at examples where he dealt with similar situations, and really evaluate and ask God, you know, okay, what can I be doing to be a better steward? Is there anything I can be doing better? And I guess go from there, right? I mean, that's
it. Well, what about this? What if somebody says, well, I think I could do a better job with his talents. I mean, he's got those talents.
His spouse.
No, his talents. Basically. His talents. What, I could do a better job if I had those talents. I have these talents, but if I had those talents, well, yeah. I could do a better job then.
Well, of course, that's tempting, isn't it?
Sure,
say that. I mean, but that's really, I think Jesus makes it pretty clear in the parable that each person is given a set that they have. And that the problem isn't the amount of talents.
No.
But the problem is with the one who is stewarding.
Yeah. Right?
So, I mean, if I'm trying to answer that question, were you thinking about going somewhere else with that?
No. Oh. No. Just that is that you have what you have.
Yeah.
You might think, well, I only have one and that's not enough. Or you might think I have five and that's too many. Or I have two, but they're not the right two.
Wait, stop. Does anybody say they have too many talents? Have you ever heard that? I've never.
There's not some talents, but they do say response. I have too many responsibilities.
Oh, okay.
I think those two are synonymous in this case.
Okay.
Talent, responsibility, things entrusted to your care.
Oh, so you mean like
that's too much.
I've got too many kids. So that can be.
Yeah. I have too many children, Lord. You should have given me one, maybe two at the most.
Yeah.
But six, really? Lord, you think too highly of me. Yeah, but as to your point, those are absolutely things that are entrusted to our care. And the Lord expects us to do our level best in order to try and grant a return God to him.
All right. So for those who've raised kids, let's for many of us, becoming a Christian might have been something that we did in the process of raising, like while we were raising kids.
Yep.
And oftentimes there's a distinct lifestyle change, distinct attitude change, maybe doctrinal thinking change, surrounding of friends change. And so when you're going back and looking at that and you're looking at maybe some fruit that you don't think is good fruit.
Yeah.
How much to assign to those kinds of things versus, because a person could go around in their mind and go crazy with that. And a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of second guessing and questioning, which I think the process of doing that is actually really important.
Like we talked about, you've got to be willing to take an honest look. Did I give it my best shot? Can I do better?
Yeah.
But yeah, don't beat that thing to death.
Yeah, and also for parents, I mean, a parent is usually not as good of a parent when their child is 2 years old than they are. But where they say, like, by the time you get to becoming a grandparent, you've kind of figured it out how to raise kids.
Oh, yeah. Our first one, we just really tanked on. By the time number six came around,
we had it pretty much
a lot smoother. Yeah. Sorry, Kim.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it is funny because, you know, when we're getting together with the kids, they talk about the differences between what was expected of them and what's expected of, say, Lucy.
Yeah, right.
That's kind of a running joke. Or even worse, what's expected of the grandkids.
Oh, yeah, right.
It's like, Dad, you just totally given up, you know, with rules and standards here. So, so like, you know, if I would have said that to you, you would have beat me.
Yeah.
But I think you're
their recollections are entirely
accurate. Yeah, no,
isn't give them that.
Yeah. But given the fact that all that, it's a process, and we grow, and we're not seeing the fruit that we would have wanted to see it by this age. For what? How should a person view that?
Yeah, that's a great question. They need to get back in the stock market right now. So
best.
Yeah. So you remember, was it 2008? The stock market made a big correction. I think the Dow dropped to like 17,000 or something. And you know, people couldn't get out fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
And if you bought the Dow then, I think the Dow is right at 41 or something thousand currently. If you just bought the Dow in 2008, you didn't have to wait, you know, even 15 years for that to double. But the problem is people saw that their investment wasn't paying off. And so in many cases, they just pulled out and they didn't want to trade anymore. And in the case of the talents here, I think sometimes that's a temptation to say, to be a little bit, not just cautious, but fearful that if I do this and I mess it up, I'm going to lose my investment. I'm going to lose my principal. And that's true, but the master hasn't returned yet. Like, especially when we're talking about kids and maybe we don't see or haven't seen what we wanted to see in our kids up to this point. The absolute wrong thing to do is to bury that in the ground and do nothing more with it, because now is the time to invest and to invest in that responsibility and invest in those kids.
Okay, so two things there. So, all right. So, so the first thing is you mentioned the master hasn't come back yet.
Right.
So
there's still time.
So the accounting isn't done.
Right.
Yeah. So we may have set a certain age for the accounting. Like, well, by this age, they better have or else.
Sure.
I mean, okay. So that's the first. And the second thing really is, what does it look like when a person decides to bury it in the ground at that point? Because I think there's probably a lot of excuses that don't sound like I'm going to bury my talent in the ground. It probably sounds maybe more like just, you know, maybe it sounds more like, well, I made this mistake and I made that mistake and they don't respect my opinion, or they don't love me, or I feel hurt. And so I'm going to just kind of withdraw a little bit and give them some space to figure it out. You know, it probably sounds something more like that. I mean, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, you know, in the case of the parable talents, the little rat that did nothing with his actually tries to put the blame back on the master and say, I knew you to be a hard man. You know, I knew you didn't want to lose money. And so I did nothing with it. And you kind of missed the point, Jack, because you just hid it and you buried it in the ground. And the master calls him on it and he says, you wicked and lazy slave.
Yeah.
he didn't say, you know, you didn't try, you didn't make the effort. He said, you were lazy. You did not take care of the responsibility that I gave you. You didn't work it. All you did was, as you admitted, you just buried it in the ground. And that's saying, Lord, you have what's yours. See, Lord, I didn't mess it up, but I didn't do anything either. And that doesn't fly with God. It says, I want to see what you did. Did you make your best effort? I think oftentimes it's too easy for people to say, you know, it's not going to work out. And so I'm just going to wash my hands of it. And you can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. So if we're talking about harvest here, I'm going to mix parables.
So why not?
So we mix metaphors. Why not just mix parables? So, you know, if we're going back to the parable of the soils, right?
Uh-huh.
And there's a really good episode on that.
I heard about that.
So going back to that, and I think one of the takeaways there was that if you don't like the fruit you're seeing, it's because of the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And so go back and work your plot. Right. So in this case, that self-examination with regards to if I don't like what's been produced before, if I have a feeling this isn't turning out, that God's not getting his return on investment, maybe there's some adjustments in my plot, my heart, my soil, my life that does need to be addressed. Right. And then, but not using that as an excuse to not work. So we can't, I'm mixing all kinds.
We just don't want to blur the lines between. Okay, so the parable of the soils is about my plot, about my personal soil, right? And so I'm responsible to make sure that the weeds are gone, that the stones are pulled up, that the ground is softened. That's on me.
Right.
My responsibility for someone else's soil ends where I encourage them to do those right things and try and help them, but their plot of ground is still their plot of ground. So clear lines of responsibility. I think it's important to note that, like, we can't swap talents. We can't do the, we have really just one question, and that is, what am I going to do with mine? Like, I have the responsibilities that God has entrusted to me personally, and you have yours, right? And we don't get to, we can help share or bear each other's burdens, but they remain our own. And so the question that we all have to answer is, am I doing right with what I have? Is there more that I should be doing? Am I fully utilizing the opportunities that I have to trade, to do business with those things on God's behalf in those areas of our life? But you can't swap them. You can't bury them. You're still going to be accountable for them. The question is, and the only question is, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do with it?
And we'll see you next time on Inner Man Radio.
Yeah, thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, you can be sure to never miss an episode by visiting innermanradio.org or get automatic notifications on your phone with the Inner Man Radio app. It's available on Google Play or Apple stores.